Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. More than 1,000 people are waiting for organ transplants. This morning, we're going to talk about organ transplants and the donors that make them possible. Joining me are University of Cincinnati Medical Center Assistant Professor of Surgery and Transplant Surgeon Dr. Madison Cuffey, Christ Hospital Clinical Laboratory Manager Carol Juniette, who donated a kidney to a coworker, and Cincinnati Public Radio Community Relations Manager Kevin Reynolds. Kevin lost both kidneys to cancer and, after a five-year wait, received a donated kidney last April. We'd like to hear your questions and comments. You can email them to us at impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all here today.
Thanks.
I think a really good way to start today's program is really to just talk a little bit about what you do and your own experiences briefly, just so people know what it's all about. And I think we'll start with our surgeon today, Dr. Cuffey.
Okay. Good morning, Cincinnati. Thank you for listening. I just want to clear a number that I heard earlier, but there's 115,000 people who are on the transplant waiting list. Approximately 93,000 of them are waiting for a kidney. Approximately another 8,000 or so are waiting for a liver transplant. Most people don't know this, but 18 patients die per day waiting for a transplant. There's a huge discrepancy between the amount of people who are waiting for an organ and donors. And my goal being on the show is more to educate and make the public aware that this is a serious issue. And if you're out there and you're thinking about organ donation or on the fence about organ donation, hopefully the stories that we share here today will make you think about organ transplant donation more. The two guests next to me will share their experiences, and I'm happy to hear them as well.
How long have you been doing transplant surgery?
I've been doing transplant surgery here in Cincinnati for basically since August. I just finished my, to just give you a little bit of a background, I wanted to become a transplant surgeon since the age of 16. I went through college, 4 years of medical school, 8 years of general surgery training, 2 years of transplant training, trained at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York, a high-powered transplant program. But I'm here in Cincinnati, and my main goal is to see that, you know, make the public aware about organ transplantation, push kidney transplantation when I can, and reduce any disparity. And these are just one of many disparities in transplantation.
Carol, tell us your story. Tell us how you came to donate a kidney.
Well, I've shared an office with my boss for probably 6 or 7 years. I've known Vic for several years. And he came down with an autoimmune disease in 2010. And that really took a number on his body. So he was on dialysis for several months and then was able to get off dialysis. He was came back to work with about 20% kidney function. And as the months progressed, that kidney function dropped down. And then early last year, he had to go back on to dialysis. And I had been thinking about donating since learning about his issue. So as he started dialysis, I started the process to see if I was a donor. And honestly, I didn't know that I would be a very good candidate for him. So went through all of the process of being tested, and they do whatever they can to make sure that you're as healthy as possible to be able to donate. And then, you know, talk to him. And
so he didn't know when you were being tested then?
No, it was a little bit of a coordinated effort to keep him in the dark. I didn't want to be tell him I was interested and then not be a candidate. I wanted to do that quietly. And it also wasn't just my decision. I have a husband and two children, and I felt like this was a life-altering situation for me. And it involved a yes from my immediate family. So there was a lot of praying and a lot of soul searching and communicating with my husband, and you know, a lot of weekend discussions to talk about, you know, why I wanted to do it, you know, and it was two reasons. You know, I just feel like it's important to give back. And secondarily, when you sit next to somebody and you see their life change every day, and it's an effort to walk from the parking garage into work and be out of breath and exhausted and have no quality, you know, of life that I would like to have, it was a no-brainer for me. But, you know, it wasn't just my decision. It was a family decision.
And we're going to talk more about how that all worked, too, in just a moment. Kevin, why don't you tell us your story?
I was diagnosed back in the late 90s with something that's called polycystic kidney disease. And it's pretty common, more common than I think people realize. Unfortunately, what seemed to have happened is that the growth of cysts on my kidneys hid a simultaneous growing of cancer. And so when things got really bad and very painful, the test determined that, and this was always, you know, the part you never like to hear, that, you know, you're an unusual case. I'm like, well, thanks. I had it in both kidneys simultaneously. I went to Vanderbilt University to try to save one of the kidneys, but as soon as they got in there, they realized the cancer was too widespread. So they took that kidney out. I came back, had to decide if I wanted to try to save the other one. It was a little too risky in terms of leaving some cancer cells behind. When you're diagnosed with cancer, before they will consider giving you a fresh new organ, which I understand intellectually at the time, emotionally it was a little hard to take, but you have to prove over 5 years that you don't have cancer. So they took the second kidney out, and I started 5 years of dialysis. And as Carol says, even though I did a different kind of, I did home hemodialysis, which gave me a little better quality of life than going in center, it wasn't me. It wasn't, it's not a healthy way to live. You got to remember, your kidneys work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I was getting about 20 hours a week of dialysis. But at the time, before I went to Vanderbilt, a friend of mine, Susie, looked me in the eye and said, I'm going to be your donor. And I went, you know, we are way far away from that being a discussion point. But she did everything over the course of that 5 years to be healthy. And when I was finally given the green light to go ahead and have people start testing, she turned out to be the best match. So last April, she gave me one of her kidneys, and it truly is giving me my life back.
And so how long did it take? I think I'd like to ask both Carol and Kevin. Maybe Carol, we'll start with you. After you donated, how long did it take you to have to be back to your normal self? I mean, that's a pretty big surgery, correct?
Yeah, it's a major surgery. I had full intentions of being back to work in 3 weeks. I was dead set on being back in work in 3 weeks. It took me four. I came back in 4 weeks, and I worked about 6 hours a day for a couple more weeks. I would say it took me a couple of months to really feel like myself. Struggle a little bit with fatigue. I don't really know if that's just my old age or, you know, just doing too many things. But I'm back to myself. I would say my goal was to be back to myself by Christmas, and I think I accomplished that. So in like 6 or 7 weeks, I really felt pretty good. And, you know, you just have to listen to your body and rest when you need to rest.
So. Dr. Cuffey, is that normal time, you think? Yeah,
you know, it is normal. To the viewers out there, you have to understand the advancement of medicine. This operation, you know, about 20 years ago would be performed through a huge incision on the side of the kidney that was being removed. This operation has undergone tremendous advancement. From one of the pioneers of surgery, Dr. Lloyd Ratner, who I was fortunate to train under. But I think it's standard of care across the country that this operation is now being performed with the use of a camera, one other port, and about an 8-centimeter incision, which is about, for most people out there, probably about 4 inches below the belly button. The recovery time is about 2 days. So You go into the hospital, you have the procedure done. Day one, we remove some catheters. By day two, most patients go home. And most patients will feel okay to go home. Now, but it's still in operation. There is some pain that is involved. And there is a recovery time. And usually we tell patients, and I maybe I'd say about 6 weeks, most patients feel back to normal. Depending on what you do, some people will ask, well, I have to work. 6 weeks is a long time. And I tell people it depends on what you do. If it requires heavy lifting, we typically recommend, you can't lift anything greater than 10 pounds for about, 6 weeks. But if it requires a desk job where you could sit at a desk, technically most people can go back to work in about a week. I mean, a week or two. We do our best job. Again, the operation is very safe. The likelihood that there's always a chance that we may have to, in doing the operation, revert back to the open technique, but it's very uncommon. And here at Cincinnati, I can tell you, most of the time, from the time I've been here, we haven't opened on one.
Kevin, why don't you talk about your recovery?
I was out of the hospital in 5 days. They had me in ICU for a couple of days just to monitor everything. And literally, it's everything. They keep very close eye on you. Went home. I was feeling better. I had some weird problem with my incision. One of the staples kind of went in sideways, and it was like a one in a million shot. So that slowed it up a little bit. But they had told me at the time that I would be off work 6 to 8 weeks. Even with the incision issue, I was back here 8 weeks to the day of the surgery working full time. So,
how do you feel now?
I feel great. You got to remember the difference between what Carol went through and what I went through is she's giving up something. I was getting something I needed. So my recovery, now the surgery is a little bigger, so the incision's bigger and all of that, but I felt better than Susie did right off the bat, because all of a sudden I had a kidney working that I hadn't had going in 5 years. And they warned us about that. They said, Susie, don't be mad at Kevin if he feels good. Because all of a sudden, all those toxins, all that excess fluid, it was coming out of me like it's supposed to. So yeah, I'm doing incredibly well.
We're talking this morning about organ donation. We focused a lot on kidneys so far. We're going to talk about some of the other types of donations that go on as well. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can send your questions to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. And we'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support comes from Johnson Grossnickel & Associates, a strategic consulting firm that empowers nonprofit organizations to make the world a better place through philanthropy. More information about Johnson Grossnickel & Associates' approach, including a series of 90-second videos offering advice on important issues facing nonprofits, is available at jgacouncil.com.
Support comes from Wright State University's weekend MBA program in Mason. Classes meet every other weekend in a supportive cohort environment, and now MBA foundation courses are offered online. You can learn how this nationally ranked program from the Raj Soin College of Business can advance your career at an information session on Friday, April 5th in Mason, wright.edu/MBA.
Support comes from Bromwell's, a Cincinnati retail tradition since 1819. From chimney sweeping to complete hearth makeovers, you can let Bromwell's satisfy your fireplace needs. Introducing furniture at Bromwell's, handcrafted and European-inspired for your home. Bromwell's, a source for fireplaces, art, design, and now furniture. Ignite your imagination. Bromwells.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about organ donation. My guest, University of Cincinnati Medical Center Assistant Professor of Surgery and Transplant Surgeon, Dr. Madison Cuffey. Christ Hospital Clinical Laboratory Manager Carol Juniet, who donated a kidney to a coworker. And Cincinnati Public Radio Community Relations Manager Kevin Reynolds. Kevin lost both kidneys to cancer and after a 5-year wait received a donated kidney last April. We certainly would like to hear your questions and comments. You can email us, impact@wvxu.org, or post your questions on our Facebook page. We did get a comment from Jeff who said, I was just listening to the show and wanted to say I recently donated a kidney 3 months ago. I was an altruistic donor. I never met the recipient. The point that I'd like to bring up is since my surgery and recovery, if it wasn't for the scar in my belly, I wouldn't even know that I had the surgery. I don't feel different. I don't look different. And he says he doesn't urinate any differently. The six-week recovery time was very accurate. And he says his surgery was at Christ Hospital where it went very well.
Great.
So that is Jeff's story. And I, from what you've all said, that's pretty much the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, and it's great to hear people who are, you know, I was fortunate. I knew my donor. Carol knew who she was giving hers to. There are so many people who need one who don't have people who can donate to them.
Let's talk about the idea of an altruistic donor. I wasn't familiar with that. So you can just call some call up and say, hey, I want to give one of my kidneys if somebody needs it?
Yes, and that's always welcome. They can call. There's any one of our transplant programs here in Cincinnati and make themselves available. We still do the workup. Just as we would any other donor. Again, you know, our biggest, you know, there's always a misconception out there, but you know, when we work up a donor, we want to make sure you're healthy. And as transplant surgeons, we do not want any harm to be done to the donor. So, you know, if you are a candidate and if this is something that you're looking forward to, it has tremendous impact. Tremendous impact for what we can do and the transplants that we're able to accomplish through an altruistic donor.
Now, we've talked a lot about live donors. Certainly, there are still plenty of people who have been in a car accident or
right.
something's happened and that can donate. Is it any better versus a live donor versus someone who's been, had a traumatic experience?
So that's always a big thing. Now, in talking about kidney transplant, the difference between a live donor, and whenever someone comes into the office and they tell me they have kidney disease, and they say, what's the best thing that you can do? I say, listen, the best thing you can do is a live donor kidney transplant. The overall, if you look at the length of time as far as years, a live donor kidney can last you 20 years or more. You know, deceased donor or cadaveric donor will last approximately 10 years, about 11. And that all depends on what type of donor, because again, you know, are you talking about the 21-year-old who has good function? Are you talking about a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old where the kidney function may be not as great? A live donor kidney, by definition, the donor's going to be healthy. The kidney function is going to be great. And like I said, when you look at long-term graft survival, it's yep. definitely far superior than a deceased donor category.
But that being said, there are plenty of organs that can't be donated from a live person. So that's when, you know, and I think all of us agree, you've got to sign your driver's license. You know, we want people to be organ donors, but you need to take it maybe one or two steps further. And this is only because I had 5 years to learn about this. So, your family can often override your driver's license.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're all kind of familiar with this, just going through what we've gone through. You need to talk to your family. You need to make sure that your desires are abundantly clear. And if you don't have family, or even if you do, it doesn't hurt also to have a living will, advanced directive sort of thing. Because in that moment of grief, if something bad would happen, a traffic accident, something like that, your family is going to be so emotional that making clear-headed decisions or following your wishes may not be their priority. So take the extra time once you make the decision that you want to be a donor and you've signed your driver's license to have that conversation with whoever's going to make those decisions for you.
Now, some people are concerned, though, that once they donate a kidney, then and Carol, maybe you can express your the way you talked about this. Now you're left with one. So if something goes wrong with that kidney, then you're in the same position Kevin was in.
It's true. But I have no greater risk with one kidney than with two. To develop diabetes or kidney disease, it's important for me to be healthy and live a healthy lifestyle. So in 10 years, I might have had hypertension and not been able to donate a kidney. So you never really know what the future holds either. So it was, you know, I feel like I was put in that place for a reason, and the decision was a gimme for me. Because I'm always a match.
Yep. Yeah, and just a quick point, you know, to our listeners. We're talking mainly about kidney transplantation here, but for many other patients on a waiting list, liver transplantation, heart transplantation, lung transplantation, these patients are dependent solely on patients, donors who, again, get into a car accident, who they actually need those donors. They don't have an option of a live donor, to the most part. And to make people aware of the seriousness of this issue, a patient who's got kidney disease has a modality of dialysis. For a liver transplant patient, they either receive a transplant or they won't survive. And I think that's the big, that's a big issue that whenever I talk to the public, kidney transplantation is one area. For liver transplantation, heart transplantation, lung transplantation, they're dependent on patients, on individuals who are donors. I think the point of your family is correct, Kevin and Carol. I mean, even as from a live donor standpoint, I'm glad that you talked to your family. But I think even if you want to become a donor and you sign up through the BMV, you still have to talk to your family. Mm-hmm. And I advise anyone who is a donor to talk to their family, let them know this is something that they want to do. And because when those end-of-life issues take place, it's similar to anything else during the end-of-life time that, you know, a lot of people look back and there's a lot of family conflict. And I think that's one way to alleviate those issues.
Yep. This question is from Tricia, who says, I'm a registered bone marrow donor and I list on my license as a donor, but how does that all sync together and match a donor with someone in need? And as a driver's license donor, she has to be dead, she says. So what other options are there to help connect and give what she can while she's alive?
Well, you know, again, I deal more with the solid organ transplant rather than bone marrow. But again, I think reaching out to all the programs, transplant programs, talking to the individuals in that area and seeing what else you can do specifically is one way to go. We have a network here, Life Center, who's the organ procurement organization here in Cincinnati, and touching base with them and talking to them and finding out more information and stuff.
And we should say we have links to a number of these organizations on our website, wvxu.org. Go to the impact page and you can find links and get a lot of information there if you'd like to sign up.
And I wanted to follow up just a little bit on the one question that you asked Carol about just having one kidney. I know from talking to Susie, and when you have a live donor, they do kind of run you on two separate tracks so that I don't know what's going on with her. She doesn't know what's going on with me. But she did tell me that the massive amount of testing they did bore out that she was perfectly healthy. And if she hadn't been perfectly healthy, they wouldn't let her donate. So out of the whole thing, she felt very confident that she probably has less risk because of the tests that she's gone through of developing anything that would impact her kidney because they check for all of that. I mean, they, you know, Carol will tell you, it's top to bottom, inside and out.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Multiple times, you know.
Right. And so if that's a concern of anybody's, please know that they are going to make sure before they do anything that you will come out of this healthy and that they're not putting your remaining kidney at risk in any way.
Yeah, and Carol's point was exactly correct. So the two points are correct. We look at everybody on a case-by-case basis to ensure that they're healthy enough for kidney donation. I think the other point that Carol raised before is that, you know, people will always wonder two kidneys versus one. The likelihood that you go through the process, even after donating a kidney, that there's going to be issues pretty low. okay? Because otherwise we wouldn't accept that patient as a donor. But also, you know, there's no increased risk of kidney failure with one versus two kidneys. There is no data to support an increased risk. And yes, to the listeners, that is the case. There is absolutely no data on that.
Who pays? I mean, if you just agreed to donate a kidney, did you have to pay anything to do that? Did your insurance have to pay anything?
Well, Dr. Cuffey is probably better to respond to that. There's organizations and that take care of it. But no, I didn't have any out of pocket.
Because I think some people do worry about that.
Well, one of the things, when you are in what Medicare refers to as end-stage renal disease, you automatically qualify for Medicare. Like you go to the head of the list and you get your card within 6 weeks. They want you off of dialysis. Dialysis is really expensive. I was doing 5-day-a-week home hemo, and they were, again, I don't know how much they actually got paid. They were billing $1,500 per treatment. And I did that 5 days a week for 5 years. So, you know, you do the math. Medicare, because they would rather you have a transplant and stop paying all of the dialysis costs, covered all of Susie's expenses, because it's in the long run cheaper for them to get me a transplant and pay for her to do it than to keep me on dialysis.
What about the fear of rejection? I mean, I heard of a friend who donated a kidney, and the person he donated to all of a sudden started to reject the kidney. They were able to work it out, and I think everything's fine now. But does that happen often, where you end up losing a good kidney to rejection?
Well, you know, that's the thing. And again, you know, when you look at the testing nowadays, I don't know how long ago that issue was, but even before we actually perform the transplant, we actually test both the donor and recipient and make sure that they are actually, there's a blood compatibility issue that, you know, we check for, but we also check for any antibodies. And if there are any antibodies that are present, the one good thing I could tell you about Cincinnati compared to a lot of programs in the country is that we have one of the best desensitization programs. This means a program that actually goes out, that puts people in a program where we can actually decrease those antibodies prior to transplantation and actually reduce the antibodies to the point that most patients, recipients, wouldn't reject the kidney. It is treatable. It does occur, but the reality is it's very low. Yeah. It's very low.
Well, we are out of time. It went very quickly, doesn't it? Very, very fast. Thank you so much for being here. And we do want to remind everybody again, go to our website, WVXU.org, to the Impact Cincinnati page, and you will find links to all the many organizations that can get you information or details or let you know how you can go about becoming a donor. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks, Marianne.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. My guest today, University of Cincinnati Medical Center Assistant Professor of Surgery and Transplant Surgeon, Dr. Madison Cuffey. Christ Hospital Clinical Laboratory Manager Carol Juniette. She donated a kidney to a coworker. And Cincinnati Public Radio Community Relations Manager Kevin Reynolds. Kevin lost both kidneys to cancer and after a 5-year wait received a donated kidney last April. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. We had help today from Jay Hanselman.
Support comes from the Murray and Agnes Season Good Government Foundation, encouraging citizen participation in public affairs.